Welcome to the Flowing Health Podcast. I'm Alessandro and I created this to inspire, empower and entertain you, to help deepen our perception and sense of connection to ourselves, others and the world around us, bringing you weekly interviews, stories, ancient and modern wisdom, helping you live healthy, joyful and purpose-filled lives. I'll also be sharing insights and experiences from my 30 years of study and practice of Qigong and other Buddhist practices. Simple things you can integrate into daily life in practical ways. Welcome everyone, Alessandro here. Welcome to the Flowing Health Podcast. And we're here to inspire, empower and entertain you, help you deepen your sense of connection with yourself, with others and with the world around us. So today I'm very excited to have a therapist, Brooke Hender, based in Surrey. And we've known each other probably for a year and a half or so, especially during lockdown on online meetings. And I know he does great work helping people with all kinds of issues. So welcome, Brooke.
Thank you very much. It's very lovely to be here, Alessandro.
Yeah, great. And one thing I'd like to know, maybe how you came to be a therapist. I think our journey into these healing arts is always interesting and everyone comes in different ways. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your background and how you got here?
Yeah. I think like a lot of people, I ended up or I became attracted to becoming a therapist was through starting to deal with my stuff. And my stuff was self-esteem based. So, and I think quite often when people think of low self-esteem, you know, they don't think of sort of confidence or loudness or, and I was quite a loud person, quite an outgoing person. And, you know, I've done lots of different things in my life. You know, I've been a professional actor. I worked in the print industry. I moved to Australia, lived there for 10 years, you know, gave up work to go to drama school for 3 years, came back to London. But self-esteem, you know, how I felt about myself was I just didn't feel good enough. And that did impact in every area of my life. It certainly impacted on my ability to be the best actor I could be. It impacted on, you know, most and on my relationships, and it was in my relationships that I noticed it most obviously. So essentially, I didn't like myself. I didn't love myself. I didn't think I was good enough. I didn't feel like I knew what I was doing in life, which is a common feeling, I think, for a lot of people. You know, not having been given the manual on how to do life. And I tried to fill that gap. So I created a version of myself, which was a quite a loud, overconfident sort of, let's see how far we can push this sort of character. And the gap between who I was and who that person I was sending out to the world, and I was trying to fill it with, you know, other stuff. So it wasn't drugs or alcohol, but it was relationships. But yeah, so essentially I would look for somebody to complete me or to make me whole or to make my life complete. And of course, that's not anybody else's job. It's mine. And then I'd get into a relationship. This is amazing. Oh, this person is amazing. And they were. And then I sort of get scared and go, oh, but then they'll find out that the person they've met isn't who I really am. And once they find that out, then they'll leave. And I can't have that happen because that will be devastating. So I need to end the relationship to stop that discovery. And thus I bring about the very thing I've been trying to avoid, the therapeutic paradox. And then I would repeat the cycle. And that got, you know, that it was ever decreasing circles. And then it was only in my sort of late 40s that I had an opportunity to talk to somebody, to explore who I was and how I felt about stuff. And that started a journey over a number of years that's still ongoing to, you know, to train as a therapist and to continue to train and then at some point to help others. I didn't want other people to have to struggle with stuff either when I know it can be changed.
Mm. Beautiful, beautiful. And I notice on your website, and we will put all the links below for people to connect with you, three things that kind of stand out. Stop comparing yourself to others, you say. Stop being anxious. Start enjoying who you are. So I think that those are, you know, I'd say universal issues that we all tend to have from probably quite a young age as well.
Yes. And, you know, there is a lot, you know, anxiety is a word that's particularly prevalent at the moment and given to cover a whole range of issues. But I do think those what I call, you know, the problems of everyday living are important. It's very easy to dismiss issues as being, well, it's not as bad as that. It's a bit middle class or it's a bit first world problem. But these are still problems that impact negatively on people's lives, that stop people from being happy, that stop them from enjoying who they are. And I think that the relationship to yourself is so fundamental. It does impact on everything. Mm. And if I can help people to go, hey, I'm not perfect, but I'm okay with who I am, and I'm not prepared to put up with that stuff. And actually, I do want to have my needs and wants met, and I will go about looking for that, you know, so that they're not putting up with relationships that are unhelpful for them, that they're not, you know, that they're prepared to change a situation that isn't working for them or whatever it is for them.
Mm. Very, yeah, great. Very interesting. I just wanted to ask, you mentioned something about, or maybe it was a testimonial I saw, about not analyzing the past, because often people think of therapy as going through all these stories and spending years. And what's your sort of take on that? I mean, do you kind of avoid making such a big issue of maybe past stories, or do you have a different way of dealing with that?
Well, it's interesting that you use the word story, and of course it is a story. We all have a narrative that we create about ourselves, which isn't necessarily true, but can be quite unhelpful. Can be helpful as well. It's the unhelpful bit that I'm interested in. So I think of, and I got this quite recently from listening to Andy Austin, who's a very interesting guy who developed metaphors of movement and integrated eye movement therapy, both techniques of which I'm a big user of and big believer of, being very effective. And you know, therapy is in two sort of major categories: care and support, or intervention and change. And I'm much more interested in intervention and change. I'm not saying there isn't a role for care and support. Of course there is. There is no one right approach. It's finding the right approach for you at that particular time. So I don't just talk about stuff. I'm interested in holding up the mirror and challenging those beliefs because they're unhelpful, and trying to do so in a very conversational way, in a highly conversational way. And aligned to that, rather than looking at the context of the problem, you know, this happened when, you know, the cliche of tell me about your childhood, you know, why is that an oft-repeated truth? Is because a lot of stuff that happens in our childhood obviously does play a significant factor and has a significant role in how we are. But what I'm more interested in is, irrespective of how the problem came into being, how are you maintaining it? What's the structure that's going on? Because there must be a structure or you wouldn't have the problem. And that's what I'm interested in addressing. So rather than reframing how you felt about what happened, because you can't change what happened, you can only change how you feel about what happened. And again, it's a completely legitimate technique. It's not a question of it's better or worse. We're just talking about the way I approach things. And I'm much more focused on the here and now and on the structure of the problem and how you maintain that, and changing that through metaphor work, integrated eye movement therapy, and through my particular conversational approach, which uses provocative change works. It's very conversational. it's best described as like talking to an old friend, but an old friend who's not afraid to challenge you.
Great. Yeah, I like that. I think it is. It's about the structure and, you know, how we live in the present. I suppose choices, making different choices in life, isn't it? Different to the unconscious choices that maybe result from, you know, the childhood issues that we've all had. But it's a choice. And I like this idea of the conversation, because I think often people think therapy is like a grilling or just going into a deep state and, you know, into a trance, and then you're out of there. So I think maybe that's why you've been very successful and people enjoy working with you, because it's very kind of real and needed, you know.
I think there is, you know, my approach is what is effective for the sort of people I work with and the sort of people I attract. It's not, again, it's not what I do is better than everybody else. That's not a concern at all. What's most important is for people to find the right person for them. No matter what it is, it's always going to be about outcome, which is largely out of our control. You know, we can't make people change. We can provide them with the right environment for them to think about things differently, whether it's technique-based or conversational. It's all basically getting them to think differently about themselves. That's essentially what we're doing, you know, showing them a new door, but we can't push them through it. They have to choose to walk through it. And it doesn't matter what approach it is. It's thinking differently about ourselves. It's changing that narrative. Yeah. I just like to leverage what I'm good at, which is, you know, utilizing my humor, which isn't for everybody, you know, and taking a highly conversational approach, because I enjoy working that way. And I don't want to work in a way that I don't enjoy, because I can't be effective if I'm doing something I don't enjoy.
Yeah, I know you work in a very direct way, and some people, you know, when it's not for everyone, and, you know, everything we do is kind of, but on that topic, I'm just curious, do you find that you work more with men or with women, or is it a kind of balance of both? Because sometimes, well, a lot of therapy tends to be, you know, women therapists that I've come across, at least. And so I'm just curious, because men have more issues generally about opening up. So maybe they find it easier to open up to a man. But I'm just curious whether you notice there's a balance that you attract more of one or the other.
I attract more women than men. Mm. So I would say over the last 4 or 5 years, 85% women, 15% men. Slightly, yeah, that's probably a good, that's pretty much the balance. Men generally come to me or start the conversation about career. So quite often it's a career, let's be dramatic, a career crisis. But let's, you know, I've got a crisis. But of course, it will feel like a crisis. But they have an issue that, because everything is about something else, I'm always interested in what's really going on. That's the first step, is where are you really? What's really going on? All problems are about an absence of two things, an absence of motion and an absence of direction. I say all problems, you know, but it's a generalization I'm going to use here, because people don't go to a therapist when they're moving forward with their life. Oh, yeah, I've got this real problem. I'm really moving forward with my life. I've never heard a client or potential client say that. Most people, on some level, are unable to move. They're unable to move because they feel stuck. And again, you obviously hear the metaphors. They feel stuck, or they don't know which way to turn. They don't know which way to go. They don't know what step to take. Or they feel like something holds them back. I'm holding myself back. I feel something's holding me back. I'm trying to move forward, but I keep hitting a brick wall. There's something in my way, or I'm on edge, or I'm going around in circles. So again, that metaphoric exploration I do formally using the metaphors of movement model, you know, based on which is Andy Austin's work, which I find very, it is not outcome based, but it is very, very, it's highly idiomatic and highly effective, because it allows, again, it allows people to decide for themselves. It's introducing movement and allowing them to determine direction. And it's really fascinating work, but also I find it has a significant impact. And this is, I listen out for this in everyday conversation, especially in networking. If you have an when I have an opportunity to talk to people, I go, so, you know, people often ask, so how's business going? And you hear things like, I'm trying to move the business forward. I'm trying to build strong foundations, and then I want to take the business forward, which is an interesting mix. Or I'm only just keeping my head above water, or I don't know which direction to take the business in. It's on a cliff edge at the moment, or I feel like I'm swimming against the current. It immediately gives me a very strong idea, a very clear indication of how they're seeing the business and what else is going on. And that exploration really yields such useful results for people. And it's very short as well. I mean, you know, it doesn't take a long time.
And do you find that when there are issues around motion and direction, do you find most of these relate to, you know, relationships, how they relate to themselves and maybe their partners, even though they're talking about career? Do you find that the key often is in, you know, how they see themselves and or their relationships?
Although I wouldn't necessarily explore that within the metaphoric or the metaphors of movement framework, there will be elements attached to it quite often. But it's always going to be about relationships to others. I mean, we're human beings. We have mothers, fathers, or there's the absence of mothers and fathers. There's the, you know, the sort of container, the environment we're born into. None of that's our fault, is it? I mean, none of us, as far as I'm aware, have a choice about when or where we're born, to whom we're born, the socioeconomic conditions, the prevailing culture of the family and the wider social environment. None of that is our fault. And yet, it impacts us on us fundamentally.
And have you noticed, just out of interest, has the age of clients changed, particularly in the last year or two? Because, I mean, even today on the news, they're talking about, you know, how many younger people are really struggling with, for example, mental health, much greater figures than they ever imagined, which I'm not surprised. But have you noticed that, you know, on the...
I don't seek or look to work with sort of school age children, or, I mean, there's quite clearly a greater need for understanding of how to deal with mental health issues for, you know, people of a younger age, at school children, because, you know, we're living in very challenging times. I mean, there's always a challenging time, but it's particularly challenging at the moment. There's so much going on, and there's been a lot going on for people attending schools, teachers and pupils. I don't work with generally the age group I tend to work with are, I would say, 40s to 50s, male and female. Of course, that's a huge generalization. I've worked with older and I've worked with younger. I generally will work with people 18 upwards, but, you know, it really depends on the individual. I'm always interested in what the individual's needs are and whether I believe my work would be of benefit to them. I just might not be the right person for them at this time. And that's the most important thing. And there are plenty of good therapists out there that I am happy to refer people to. And also, they might need other resources. There's not just therapy. I mean, there may be skills they don't have. That actually, by gaining those skills, it's very easy to think that everything's about one thing. It's not. You know, there could be, it's not just beliefs and values are important. It's also resources. If we don't have the skills, if we don't learn how to do something, we can't be expected to know it. I mean, I grew up always believing, and this might be a male thing, I can't say definitively, but, you know, I sort of grew up thinking that for some reason, as a man, I should know how to do everything myself. And certainly for me, that's been really, really unhelpful, really unhelpful over the years.
Well, I suppose it comes from, you know, naturally, when we were hunter-gatherers, the men did have to literally bring home the food, you know, provide for the family. So I think it is built into the man that, you know, he ought to be at least in control, providing, maybe not even, you know, seeming vulnerable. But I think all that is changing and needs to change for sure.
Society changes constantly. You know, there is no one right way to be, and we're always navigating. You know, if you look at the culture, what people call the cultural wars, you know, areas such as sex and gender, the roles of men and women, even the categorization of men and women, there's so much that's, and the debate feels to me like it's there's missing nuance and respect for opposing. I can completely understand why people don't want to get involved, because in exploration, there may be, you may say something that's deemed wrong. It feels like quite an unforgiving environment at the moment, especially on social media, where we seem to lack nuance, maybe because of the very medium itself. But then again, I'm, you know, 54-year-old, fairly posh sounding white male, so, you know.
Yeah, it's a very complex area. My daughter's 23. I have to be very careful what I say, the words I use. I mean, you know, I know my intention is always good. So I say to her, look, I didn't mean, you know, I'm not putting anybody down, but she'll say to me, you can't say that word these days. You can't use that. And I said, but I heard it the other day. Yeah, but they said it and you can't. And all right, right.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I suppose that's the nature of generational change. What was acceptable now becomes unacceptable, and maybe it will become acceptable again. Who knows? But I think, you know, there is no definitive truth. Things are what we make them to be to a degree. But, you know, there are facts as well. It's a complex area. It's a complex area, which is why I just focus on what I can do. How can I help people to lead better lives? To, as far as I'm aware, this is it. We only have one life. So if I can help somebody to stop worrying about what other people think, which is such a massive thing.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong in, I compare myself to other therapists, but I don't use that comparison to beat myself up with. If I can look at them and go, oh, how are they doing that? How have they managed to be successful in social media? I use that as inspiration, but I don't, if I looked at it and went, oh my God, I'll never be as good as them. I don't know why I bother. There's no point me doing that. That's unhelpful. We can't control what other people think about us.
Yeah.
We don't have to, obviously, if you're an arsehole, that's not going to be helpful. And I do always suggest don't be an arsehole, but outside of that, well, I think it's fairly good. I think it's fairly good advice. And I think, you know, to a degree, you know, I was an arsehole for quite a number of years in my life out of fear, of discovery, you know, get your attack in first because otherwise there's a vulnerability. You know, it's very telling when people I know comment on posts I make and they highlight, you know, people that have known me for a long time, they highlight, so different to how you used to be, sort of thing. And they're right. And actually, I have to own my, I have to behave, own my behavior, not just now, but past behavior. But equally, I should be allowed to change. I should be allowed to progress. We all make mistakes. It's impossible to be a human being without making mistakes. But we have to own, you know, take responsibility for our behavior.
Yeah, and that's how we progress. I mean, this year for the first time, I put my values up on social media. And when I wrote them and read them, I've never really thought about them much. I've just thought I'm a good guy. I hope, you know, I'm kind. I I'm caring. You know, even though I'm divorced, obviously I failed in that marriage. But when I wrote them down and I put them out there, it was very empowering actually to think this is what I stand for, and it's very clear And even when I look at them up there, you know, sitting there, and I think, wow, they're really, for me personally, they inspire me. Whereas if it's vague, you know, and I'm comparing, like you say, sometimes I think, God, there's so many great podcasts. What have I got to say? And what have we got to share here with the world? But actually, if it helps, you know, one or 10 people, that's good enough. You know, it's just, we're just sharing from our own experience. So
plus personal satisfaction, if you enjoy having conversations with people, why shouldn't you do it? It's not, I think it's slightly different if you're going, you know what, I want to create a podcast because I want to topple Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Or I want to, I think, you know, we all do, you know, why do, I think we need to do things because we enjoy them.
Yeah.
I mean, I try not to do things I don't enjoy. I mean, I'm learning chess. Like many people, I watch The Queen's Gambit. In fact, I watched it twice. I really enjoyed it. And I thought, right, I'm going to learn to play chess properly. Now, I'm not looking to be a grandmaster. I'm not looking to, but I enjoy the process of learning and going, oh, yeah, that was a silly move. Oh, okay, yeah, that wasn't good. It's a process.
I'll have a game with you. I love chess.
I'd be welcome, because at the moment all I play is a computer, so it would be very interesting.
Oh, I love chess. My dad always played, you know, he'd play at home. He'd invite people. He was in the United Nations, invite people from different countries to play chess. And I learned a lot of the rules as a sort of 8-9-year-old, just watching and observing. And actually, it's such an amazing game because it's so kind of intricate. But like you've seen from the series, you can be thinking 10 moves ahead.
I think it's amazing. Yeah. I think it's such...
And very good for the mind, I think. Very good for the...
Yeah. You know. I go through, you know, my girlfriend reminded me last night, you know, I'm very good at picking up stuff and putting it down again, because I do get very interested in stuff, and some of that stuff doesn't stay in my life and some of it does. So during lockdown, I studied amateur radio because I had a sort of passing interest in radio. So I had the opportunity to do the exams online, and I failed my full license. I'm not a full license holder. But I got my intermediate and my novice sort of level. But and now I don't have the time to invest or all the level of interest to sustain that. And I'm well aware of how I am. So, but things will come around. And again, I'm really interested. I used to play trumpet, and I'd really like to pick up an instrument again. Ideally an electronic version so that I can plug in headphones. There's no such thing as quiet trumpet practice. As wonderful an instrument though it is a loud instrument. And so I've been sort of thinking about how could I learn to do something. I've been looking at electronic woodwind instruments and things like that.
Or insulate your room.
Well, yeah, there is that. But it would require some insulation, I suspect. Yeah, things come into our lives, and I think, I don't even know how we got here, but...
Well, no, but about picking up things and you know, keep learning, and I'm sure you bring these things into your work. And just out of interest, I have a feeling, maybe we talked about this before, that when you work with people, you know, ideally, you don't work for such a long period, so you get into the work, and you not try, but you tend to work... In bursts with people, so it's not years and years.
No. I mean, I offer two packages essentially. One is what I sort of call like a Kickstarter or an essential package, and that's you know, 5 sessions of 60 minutes over 2 months, and that will definitely bring about a process of change and a start of change. We'll uncover stuff, we'll discover where people are, and people get a lot of value from that. And then the other package is a bigger package. It's 12 sessions over 6 months, and each session is 90 minutes. And it's for those people who want to go beyond the starting of a process of change, because once you start a process of change, it will continue. But, you know, how they want to go a bit deeper, they want to get longer support. But again, it's only 6 months, but they are longer sessions. There's slightly more depth. There's slightly more time to explore. And obviously, I offer a bigger package in terms of benefits. But it's really what people are looking for. But therapy should be something that's I like to think of it as, oh, I'm not sure about this. I'll have a chat with Brooke and get his perspective on it, and he'll provide me some insights. And it's not my job to give advice. If anything, I generally try and give bad advice deliberately to see what the person's reaction is. But people know that I will try and cut through to what's really going on and to give them some opportunities to think differently about it.
Yeah.
And that's a process that we can change over years. I'm still changing. I did some work recently with somebody, a friend of mine in Lebanon, and it had a huge impact on me. And this is after 4 or 5 years of doing this work professionally and training beforehand and having had therapy myself. Literally a 5-minute technique that really dealt with something that I've wrestled with for a very, very long time, which is worrying too much about what other people think about me.
Which is what you help people with.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the thing. I don't pretend that I don't think it's human. Who doesn't have any problems? Who doesn't, you know, it makes us who we are.
Yeah.
And I certainly wouldn't ever pretend that I don't have stuff. And I've still got plenty of stuff that would be helpful to work on. But the stuff that really used to get in my way, more importantly, how I feel about myself has shifted. I don't feel like I've got anything to prove to anybody else. I enjoy what I do, and I'm focused on helping other people.
Brilliant. Well, I think we're coming to the end, Brooke. I've loved talking to you, and maybe a final tip on if you did have to give your younger self advice. I mean, I was thinking age 15, and then I thought 18, and actually let me just say your younger self, because people develop in different ways, but just life lesson or lessons, what would you advise your younger self?
I mean, certainly at 15 there was quite a lot going on, which I don't think is appropriate to share here. And so I don't know if I'd address my 15-year-old self.
No, let's do an older self.
Yeah, let's do older. I think at 18, I still had, I really felt like I wasn't prepared. I was a very confident young man, I'd say, in lots of ways. And the thing that, on my seven steps to better self-esteem, step number 7 is don't do it alone. And I think the advice I would give my younger self would be, don't do it alone. I very much had a belief that I had to figure out all the answers, that it was up to me to and I genuinely believe that how I was how I was meant to be, that it was fixed. I didn't really believe that it was possible to change, or that there were different ways of thinking and different ways of being. So I would encourage them. Oh, of course, I could very glibly say, oh, well, go and get some therapy. Yeah, that might have been helpful. But equally, asking somebody to mentor me, investing in other things might have been very helpful. So, yeah, don't do it alone.
Brilliant. Love that. So thank you, Brooke. I'll put all the links below. To how
Thank
people
you,
can get in touch, because I know you work online, quite a lot, especially these days, and people can then work from overseas as well, where this.
Yeah. And I do get a lot of, I just will mention that. So I've been running my meetup group for over 3 years now. And obviously with recent developments, I took it online. I've got over 1300 members from all around the world in it. Every 2 weeks, I offer a 1-hour free meeting on self-esteem, and every month at the beginning of the month I offer a 90-minute paid meeting to explore and discuss with a limited amount of people a particular issue or a particular aspect. So that, but most of the meetings are completely free, so people are welcome to come along and
sounds like a great resource. I'll put that link there as well for people.
Thank you, Alessandro.
So thank you, everyone, for listening. And if you want more information on energy work, Qigong, I'll put that below as well. And Brooke's details as well. And I'll leave you with my thought to remember to always keep a smile in your heart, everybody. Thank you, Brooke.
Thank you, Alessandro.
And been a pleasure. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And always keep a smile in your heart. That's just a little tip from a Qigong master in China. He passed it on to my good friend, Margaret. If you want to get in touch, the best way is through the website flowinghealth.co.uk or on the email below, alessandro@flowinghealth.co.uk. You'll find these and other links in the notes. Take care of yourselves, everybody, and thank you for listening.